I call this meeting of Sylvania City Council for September 7th, 2021 to order. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Mrs. Capalini?
Here.
Mr. Frye?
Here.
Mr. Hanem?
Here.
Mr. McCann?
Here.
Mr. Richardson?
Here.
Ms. Stow?
Here.
Mrs. Westphal?
Here.
All seven members of City Council are present, therefore a quorum does exist. I'd like to welcome all of our guests to this meeting, particularly recent council member Sandy Hussman. Welcome back. We're happy to see you here. With that, I would invite Mr. Richardson to lead us in our Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Additions to the agenda, I would like to add 7A, which is ordinance 63, 2021, as recommended during the public hearing held at 7 o'clock this evening. Mr. Hanem, I would also like to add a report of your zoning and annexation committee hearing. I can do it down at 14A, and I don't think any of those participants are still here. Is that accurate from your view as well?
14A is fine.
Okay, we'll put it in as 14A, a report of the zoning committee, zoning and annexation committee. Mr. Frye, do you have any additions?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Members of City Council?
Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Richardson?
Yes, I would like to add a brief discussion about open board appointments.
I'd like to make that 14B. Any additional items from members of City Council? Hearing none. Mr. Sanford?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Schreier?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Chief Snore?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Aller?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Or Mrs. Briney?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
With that, is there a motion to approve our agenda as amended?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the agenda as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and our agenda for this evening's meeting is approved. Moving on to Agenda Item 4, we have approval of our regular meeting minutes from August 16th. Mr. Frye?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move approval of the meeting minutes from council, from the council meeting of August 16th, 2021, as submitted.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the meeting minutes of August 16th, 2021, as submitted. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and those meeting minutes are approved. We are fortunate to have with us tonight two executive directors of important organizations within our community. In no particular order, except the one that's on the agenda, I invite Andy Erbskorn, the Executive Director of Heritage Sylvania, to give us an update on a new project. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, President Frye, esteemed members of council and administration for allowing me the opportunity to share a couple of updates at Heritage Sylvania. I'm going to start with the one that excites us the most. Let's start with the thing that excites you the most. As you know, since I've been here, and I would guess longer than I've been here, there's been ongoing discussion about how we use Heritage Sylvania, especially our campus on North Main Street, to its best advantage. Of course, we are passionate about the programs that we do, and we touch the lives of thousands of school children every year. And we hear from teachers and administrators and parents all the time about the value of that service. But we also know there are a lot of hours in the day when we are doing school programs. We also know that through the revitalization, downtown revitalization plan that you went through last year, that having a historic property or historic entities, particularly one with green space in the downtown area, is truly unique, not just to Ohio, but actually across the nation. And it's one of the many wonderful things that makes downtown Sylvania so exciting. And of the many, many, many lessons that COVID has taught us in the last 18 months, the need for outdoor space has been one of them. We are all craving outdoor space to gather in, to celebrate in, to connect in, and maybe just relax in. So with all of those things in mind, we are very, very excited to announce through the generous donation, generous financial donation, we were able to hire Tim Bachrager. He is partnered with EDGE. EDGE is a planning, urban design, and landscape architecture firm based in Toledo. They actually have offices, many locations throughout the country. They have been essential in doing some work for Pennsville. They have worked on some of the great city-state projects in downtown Toledo. I also just learned that they worked on the athletic complex and the areas surrounding it at Ohio State. But I actually have known Tim for, we figured out, 22 years. I worked with Tim first at Souder Village, and Tim was the one who created the vision that took Souder Village to its next level when he created the vision for what they call the time, walk the time. We were very excited to bring Tim on board, and he is equally excited to be a part of this project. Tim is going to help us look at our spaces, and as he said, take the puzzle apart, put the pieces out there, and then come up with creative ways to put the pieces back together. Our goal is to create a vibrant, engaging community space that is uniquely Sylvania, but also uniquely Heritage Sylvania. And we believe Tim is that person to do it. We want to create a space that can be used for celebrations, performances, gatherings, events. The list goes on and on and on. The space that will also then allow us to continue to do the education programs, which are our mission and our passion, to be able to have kind of the best of both worlds. He is going to look at the green space in the historical village. There's a lot of unused green space. And he's going to look at that space. He is also going to look at the Sister City Garden, which is a wonderful oasis, really, looking behind the museum building. It just needs a little bit of love and attention. We are going to find a way that we can still honor that partnership with the Sister City that the garden's created to do, but really to create a vibrant, unique outdoor space, an outdoor venue, really. And we think with the kind of the growth of the Redford Art Blocks, the expansion of Dora, and the exciting things that are happening with our neighbors at Inside the Eye, we really see that Sister City Gardens having great potential to be kind of this really unique outdoor venue space. It's also going to help us look at the Heritage Center Museum and how we can recontextualize it given its new environment. We are working with Inside the Eye, Katie and Brandon with Inside the Eye, and we are going to work with their plans and make coordinated, collaborative plan that will be a smooth transitional space that will be welcoming and inviting, will also allow for safe pedestrian access, but also serve as a gateway back to the garden, the Revitalized Garden, and also to the historical village. We're looking for ways to really unite these three spaces into one complex. I don't have many details beyond that. We just got started. We are going to reach out to various stakeholder groups, our neighbors, our various businesses, and get their input. And when the project is done, we will have great visuals. I'm a visual person. I'm going to love to see these paintings that we will create, the records that we will create for us. But also, we will create a plan and budget that can be done in phases so that we can work on it over time. We will then set about to fundraise the money for this project. And we really think it can be a great community rallying spot And it's our way of giving back to the community who supported us for so long. And I'll tell you, we are just so excited about this. It's a little breathless. It's just so exciting. We really believe it's going to be transformative for Heritage Sylvania, but we also feel and hope it will help continue the wonderful transformation that's going on downtown and into the second block. So we're very, very excited about that. The second project isn't really as exciting, but it has taken a lot of time in the last year. And we really wanted to kind of update you on what's going on. During the polar vortex in February, and I know it's hard to believe when you look back, as hot as it's been, but you know the polar vortex is a really horrible weekend in February. The furnace at the Lathrop House quit, causing all the domestic and fire suppression water pipes to freeze and burst. Now, while insurance was able to cover the damages that were incurred by that, in doing work, we uncovered a lot of other issues. And when you're dealing with a house that's 170 years old, you're going to have issues. We worked with Joe Shaw and Tim Burns here in the city, and they helped us identify several major areas that we needed to address. This is not renovation, this is not restoration, this is stabilization of the house to allow us to continue to preserve the house, preserve the structure, and have a safe environment for our guests and our staff. We have to date done about half of the work, and we were able to raise grants, successfully applied for several grants that paid for that work. We also have about half of it left to do that we're going to work to address in 2022. Once work is created or completed, though, we really believe this is going to give us this fresh, almost blank slate to then build upon. In early 2020, we created an advisory committee of regional representatives, historians, architects, and educators to help us create a vision for opening more of the house to the public. We've got sidetracked a little bit with all this other construction work going on, but we really feel that once this is done, we're going to come in and we're going to be able to envision the space even better. Our goal is to open more of the house to the public. We really want to create a space where we can talk about this rather challenging chapter in our history, where we can connect, where we can have conversation, and where we can invite the community in. It would be a multi-purpose space. And we'll be hearing more about that as the process continues. As always, I want to thank all of you for your support, for your guidance, for your input. It's wonderful to be able to contact you and ask questions and help guide us through this process, for your membership, and also just for believing in us and what we do. Thank you so much. I'd be happy to answer questions. As I said, I don't have a lot of details about the EDGE project because we just asked for it, but I'd be happy to answer questions.
I do have one quick question. Do you have a timeline on this? I know you're going to fundraise the money, mm-hmm. so that is, you know, not as black and white in terms of how long that will take, but any projection on how long you think it will take to get to some level of completion?
Our goal is to have the plan and the vision in place by early November. We'll probably then start fundraising. I'll know more after we have that plan. The one great thing about having a phased project is that we can fundraise and do some work and then fundraise and do some work. So it's not like this is going to sit on the shelf for 5 years.
I do want to take a quick moment to thank you, Andy, and for to thank the board as well on our behalf. Certainly, this is something that we've spoken with you about several times and invited you to create that vision and then to share it with us. So I'm grateful for your willingness to listen to those words and to advance this, and I'm excited to see what comes back.
We are too. I've mentioned to a couple of you, you know, I have been turning this over in my head for several years, and then suddenly realized I am not the person to be able to create this vision, and I'm just blessed that my new team operator and was able to bring him on board because he is that person.
Thank you, Andy. You have chosen well in Tim Bachrader. My architectural firm has worked with him as well, and we've had very good vision and very good results through him. and I look forward to his and your visions for the future of the Heritage Museum grounds. You have far more visibility now than that building the museum has had for a very long time.
For 100 years, Emma.
You're going to lose a little of it with the inside the five addition, but there's still going to be greatly more vision into that, and you need to take advantage of that.
Well, and you think that by creating this kind of gateway into the complex, it's going to create more vision, visibility for the garden and village as well.
And we will reestablish our sister city relationship once we're allowed to cross the border both directions.
Just a quick comment. Thank you for taking the lead on this. And the historical village is really just a small part of the downtown, and I'm hoping that we could maybe use his services to put the puzzle together for our whole downtown rather than just a small piece.
I think this is probably a good time to relate the economic development vision of former Mayor Jim Sini that my administration carried through in, that dates back decades, to establish nodes at the end of our downtown, south end with the hotel, the north end with the historic village, to create an atmosphere for development in the downtown block. That does not happen by accident. It was planned by leaders in the past, and you're carrying that forward very well. We appreciate that.
The Lantern House is just as exciting. It could be a magnificent event space. Thank you.
It is. I'm too in depth in the construction work right now, but it needs time.
Thank you.
All right. Agenda item six is to hear from our second executive director present tonight, executive director of the Sylvania Prevention Alliance, formerly known as SCAT. Maria Gagnon, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for all of you who let me give you a little update on what we're up to. So you know us, hopefully, as Sylvania Community Action Team or SCAT. Over the last year, we have worked on changing our name along with the board and the staff members. That has been a process. I wore one of our t-shirts tonight just because it does have our new logo on it. It also is on the front of the folders that I gave you. But our reasoning for changing the name, if you haven't heard, lots of people like to say, oh, the poker, the SCAT. And it got to a point where we had youth saying to us, I don't want to join that poker. Well, our mission and vision is to help the youth in Sylvania. If we can't do that because of our name, it was time to change our name. So Sylvania Prevention Alliance, after many meetings of brainstorming, came around. Sylvania, obviously, because we're located in Sylvania Prevention, that's what we do, that fits us. Alliance, we are in alliance with 11 organizations like City Council, like the Township, Police, Fire, etc. And so that seemed to fit us, and there we came up with Sylvania Prevention Alliance. The logo, the tree, that is from our previous logo, so we wanted to keep that. That represents us very well. But we did change the colors. We became a little more up-to-date. So we're two blues now, which is on the front of those folders. And I think it's a really trendy logo now. But just to give you an idea, one of the things we did also, along with changing the name, was we changed our vision and mission, not because we are still trying to reach out to our youth and help with drug and alcohol. That's still obviously very important. But what we have learned over the last few years is that topic is so much bigger, things that we can help our youth with. Yes, drugs and alcohol, but also now, you know, gaming, social media, bullying. There's so many things that we need to address with our youth. And so we change our vision and mission to make those encompass all of those types of things. It does talk about that in your folder as well. But our vision now is to be the leading safe and healthy community. So we want Sylvania to be, and if we can get our families and our community, our families and our youth to do that, then hopefully our community can do that. And our mission is empowering youth, families, and the community to make safe and healthy choices through education, awareness, and support. And again, that includes drugs and alcohol, but that's not our only focus because there's so many more things now that should encompass. So we've changed both of those. A couple other things that are new to us. We still have our youth groups in the schools. Love that partnership. That's wonderful for us. The one youth group that has been in the junior highs and high schools, we've changed the name of that now. Also, this is in your folder, but it's called Youth Above the Noise. We did a little edgier there, the colors are a little more empty. And that was chosen by our youth that have been very involved. And again, since we were changing our name, we wanted to give them their own identity. So this talks about the things that youth group does. The other thing that we have done this year, and part of the funding that you guys support us with goes towards this, but Core Committed is our other youth group that we've always had in high school, Northview and Southview. We've not had it in the junior highs. And we added that this year. We actually were in the process of doing it last year, but we don't know what last year looked like, so it was really hard to start a new program in school that kids weren't going to. But now we kicked it off in the three junior highs as well, because one of the things we've discovered, by high school, kids are so involved in so many things already. They already have their interests. They think they maybe sort of know where they've been. Sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, they don't have all that, especially sixth grade. And we can get them thinking positive, making healthy, safe choices through junior high, then come high school, that's just a norm for them. And so we have kicked that off. I hired a new coordinator, and we are super excited about that program. The other thing that I wanted to mention to you that we have coming up that is a little new for us, you're probably all familiar with Red Ribbon Week. We've been doing that in the school since probably the 90s. We are still continuing with Red Ribbon Week, a little bit different. We are tailoring it strictly towards our elementary kids. That's tended to be who has partaked in that anyways. The difference is, again, it was talking more about drugs and alcohol, and although that is in there, we're doing a lot of fun activities in the schools that have other things, mental health, again, gaming, social media, those kinds of things, because kids are doing phone together and younger, et cetera. And then instead of our walk of life that we've always had at the high school, or had at Southview on a weeknight, we got a lot of feedback from some of the administrators of the elementary schools that said, in the evening like that is not good, you're trying to get the kids to bed, dinner time, et cetera. So we're doing a curriculum in the schools, and then on Saturday, October 2nd, we're doing a celebration end of the week. It's called Red Ribbon Healthy Choices Week, and then celebration at the Lander Park. We partnered with them, and we're going to be doing some really fun activities there. So it looks totally different for us. We just decided to change the name, vision, everything else. Why not just change it all up and make it as good as possible? we felt like, just take it all on. So we do have that coming up as well. And that's kind of it for our update at the moment. But again, I appreciate your support. I appreciate your time and listening. And just wanted to give you an update on where we are and what we look like so you recognize us when you're out in the community. Anybody have any questions?
Maria, if I could just make a couple quick comments. First, I haven't had the pleasure of meeting you, although I've heard fabulous things about you in the community, and now I can speak to them because you've done a beautiful job today. I would share with you that I'm so excited as I listen to you because everything needs a facelift now and again. And I think it was time for a facelift for Scott. And I think you seem to have the energy, vision, and passion for the role, and I'm looking forward to great things, and thank goodness for our community that we have someone that will really help address these issues. They're very important. I love the expanded piece as well. All great, so thank you.
Absolutely.
Hi, Maria, I would like to add, being the council representative to the Maine Prevention Alliance, that the team is a great team, that we work together well. And there are so many committed people on there, and you've done a great job in coalescing that group and getting us to move forward. So I appreciate your efforts.
Absolutely, yes. It's not about me. It's definitely about the team, the board, the staff, everybody. Ryan has done awesome. Cindy is still on our board and is awesome. So greatly appreciate that. Thank you. Any other questions?
Not directly related to the kids, but Sandy helped start a golf tournament for SCAT. And you've upgraded that. You've raised the bar on that. That was a couple of Fridays ago.
Yep.
I attended it. It was packed.
Yes, it was.
The price is up. I'm sure you're making more dollars on it, and it was a very good event.
Thank you. Yes, we enjoyed it, and yeah, we're super excited that every year it continues to grow. So thank you for the support. Thank you.
Thank you for being here tonight and up updating us.
Absolutely.
There's no need for you, you or Andy, to stay for the rest of the meeting. You are, of course, welcome to, once Andy releases you, I guess. Let's move on with our agenda then. We are up to agenda item 7, which is a report of the public hearing on SUP 3, 2021, held this evening at 7 p.m. in these council chambers. Mr. Frye.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The meeting was called to order at 7:13, and we had the opportunity to hear from people that were in support of the SUP number 3, 2021. We had nobody come to that particular piece of it. Then we had one question from the audience, which was clarified by Mr. Aller. And with that, that gentleman was pleased and satisfied. He was a neighbor, and was fine with the end result of that. And with that, we had a motion to move forward with ordinance 63-2021, which is the consideration of a potential approval of SUP 3-2021. So with your permission, Mr. Mayor, I would like to introduce ordinance number 63-2021 and read by title only. Granting a special use permit to allow the operation and expansion of a church and school at 522 West Alexis Road, Sylvania, Ohio, on the application of Galeb Abulana on the recommendation of the Municipal Planning Commission. I move approval of ordinance 63-2021 as an emergency measure.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded for passage of ordinance 63-2021 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and ordinance 63-2021 is enacted as an emergency measure. Thank you. Now let's move on to agenda item 8. This is additional discussion about a tax incremental financing district for our downtown.
That was 7A.
That was 7A.
Okay. Thank you.
That was the past ordinance 63. So we are here for more information. Mr. Sanford has prepared a report, and I think he's distributed it to all of you. Again, when we started this process, Mr. Sanford went out and found our consultant, Michelle Johnson, who had knowledge of TIFs and SIDS and grant writing. We specifically looked for those in our consultant. It wasn't just the city planning part of it, it was for this. So this is part two, and we have some both scheduling and financial updates for you. Mr. Sanford.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To first talk about the handout, the first page, Leslie Bryan put together some information on a timeline, some of the definitions and things in regard to the description of the improvements that could be made in the TIF area. The second part, we talked a lot about at the last meeting about the values of properties that are in the areas that we talked about. And I want to thank Kevin again for saving the paper and putting it up on our screen, showing the downtown, the original area was red. And then with the additional areas that I suggested at the last meeting. Laura Bigelow in the mayor's office has some background and understands this. She was able to put this report together that shows the current values. Also, though, in the process of gathering this information and being able to answer your questions, I was talking with other communities, and Perrysburg has had experience with TIFs, and their administrator talked to me to Glenn Grisdale with Revely, and I have worked with Glenn in the past, and just in a conversation with him on the phone, I said, Glenn, what are you doing on Tuesday nights? I think if you could come to the meeting and help it answer some of these questions would be better than me trying to interpret and share. And I'm going to invite Glenn to come up now, and you can tell you a little bit more things that he's done. I have worked with him, been to workshops that he has put on. His company did the land use plan for Sabine Township recently, that was last time I think we worked. And again, he's just very helpful with what he was sharing. And Glenn, why don't you come up now and tell us a little more about your company and what you do, and then we can get into specifics. Because I think what we want to hear from Glenn is to, what can this TIF really mean to us? What is the timing of the TIF? Meaning, when will we put it in? At the last meeting, we were very concerned about how quickly we get it in place. We might have a different perspective after we hear from Glenn. And then also, how long do we have the TIF? Is it a 10-year TIF? Is it longer than that? So these are the things that we talked about. So with that, Glenn, it's all yours.
So the one thing that I didn't say when you were all that, I'm doing tax, is in my hair. Thanks for having me tonight. Bill, I did a good job introducing what we've done in the past. We've been in Bowling Green since 1998. Actually, we were corporately on 9/11, so we've been actually 4 years before 9/11, we corporately on 9/11. We've been assisted in a variety of communities. Most recently, so we township, we helped their zoning, we helped with the master plan. We just got done with Springfield. We're on October right now. We've got another development for a variety of different communities. We have on staff some former Toledo folks, Tom Lemon, Rachel Locke, Tom Locke, who's the Wood County Economic Development Director. So we've been around doing this stuff. And what we specialize in is plan implementation. So not only do we do the master plans, we want to make sure that the plan stays active, it's not Pollyanna, that it's realistic, and then gets implemented. Because at the end of the day, when it doesn't, we don't mind. That darn plan just sits on a shelf, and plans are going to be done and agreed. And so we want to make sure to keep our livelihoods moving forward with the plans to get implemented. So in talking with Bill, he had advised that maybe we'd come up today, tonight, to talk to you about the lessons learned that we've learned from parents with their TIF. And most recently, when I was in Northwood, revitalized and rebuilt the former Google Mall. So we have that underway right now, and we have that with the TIF. And the key thing with the TIF, unlike any other economic development tool, is that it's time sensitive. So Fedora, you just created Fedora. Fedora is kind of a fire and forget, right? So you create Fedora, and then you wait for activities to come and benefit from Fedora. The CRA, the community investment area that you have plenty of, that is kind of fire and forget. You get the program up and running, and when someone wants to benefit from it, there's a whole procedure around that. The goal in economic development, I always try to tell people, that economic development is actually what happens when you do everything right. Okay, so we try to make sure that folks don't get caught up in the Me Too kind of thing. You'll find that a variety of communities followed you with Dora. So I think Napoleon, we advise, they followed you with Dora. And then I think Perrysburg, who we help, they said, hey, let's do a Dora. And they did the Me Too. And then Bowling Green did the Me Too. And everyone thinks that the last economic development tool is going to be the last thing we need. And often that's not the case. So with the TIF, just like special improvement districts, you want to make sure that you get the time right. Because the easy part is understanding the area, understanding the improvements that you want to do, and understanding the cost estimates. Kevin can do a great cost estimate for that. You figure out the feeder parcels, right? And then when you do all the math, you do the public hearings and all that stuff. You certify it with the county auditor, mail the stuff down to ODSA, and they lock the base values in. Right? It seems very easy. The key thing is that you want to make sure that you pick the right term because you're on the hook to get the money back. The good thing that you guys are willing to do is that you're just going to pick one out of pocket, I guess, or build a title. He said you guys don't. So that's the good thing. We want to make sure that you capture the valuation back. And getting $2 million back won't be hard. I mean, I think you're going to be at $11K from my 480 months, right? It gets around $2 million back. That's not much. $16.5 a month, you get $3 million back. The key thing is, though, is that getting money incrementally off your existing base over the 10-year period is somewhat tough. If I had a crystal ball of how county auditors would appraise things over, over that 10-year period, when you've got three triennial assessments, anyone at any given time can ask for a DOR, and they constantly, some other, give those readjustments. The key thing you want to keep in mind is that you're going to be constrained by your existing valuations. So all of the stuff that you're going to benefit from the most will be your new valuation. And that's all time sensitive, right? So if you have a project in mind where you know where the new valuation will be generated, that's easy to do. So that's kind of the nuance with the program, is that if you have private sector projects that can cash flow right away, then I would say start it immediately. And once you figure out what the value of that is, and you figure out the value of your improvements, the math is easy. But some of the key things to keep in mind is exactly what the costs are going to be, right? Figure out what those are. I just heard tonight about the Arizona project. This might be a good time to kind of capture the value of those programs that they're looking to bring to the table. When you start to match their fundraising efforts with your general revenues, and you get a good bang for the buck. You start to leverage your initiatives with some private sector, chamber of commerce stuff, downtown business owners and things like that. That's where you're going to get the most bang for the buck, leveraging your dollars, is to make sure that everyone understands what their roles are and understands what the taxpayer dollars are going to do and what they can't do. Because at the end of the day, new sidewalks don't bring people downtown, new streetlights don't bring people downtown. This is just what we see. Products bring people downtown, and products need to be housed in businesses that stay open, uniform hours and things like that. We see that a lot of downtowns that we work. So the goal is to make sure that you get the most out of the staff through timing, through mutual understanding of what you can do, what you can't do, and things like that. So I guess I'll just open it up for questions. I'm not going to do a lot.
Bill mentioned, we were eager to get something in place. And what you're saying is that we ought to put this in place when we know we have something coming? Is that what?
Yeah, there's two schools of thought. Once you lock the TIF in place for this specific area, you're going to lock in for 10 years, right? And the benefit is you want to grab those base values in a new construction comes in. So we're going to project out for the next 10 years. If you don't know of any new projects that are coming, the only thing that we can work on is the existing valuation going up every 3 years. Mm-hmm. And that we can kind of do the math. You guys did a good job of grabbing all the parcels in those areas. We'll have to look at base values, and then we can kind of model out where that valuation, the existing stuff, is going to trend in. Let's say you get started in with OSD board costing $40, and nobody really doing projects because they don't know if we're going to be in the Delta area, the Gamma area, the Wind area, and all that, right? You might not have a new project for 5 years, and now you're only benefiting from 5 years that, well, literally 3 years. This thing would take about 24 months for anything new to get captured, just the way the projects work. So you're going to be on a limited time frame. So there's a couple schools of thought. We can look at projecting out what that existing valuation would be, and then maybe over the next month you can figure out exactly the costs of those improvements that you want to make, and then figure out at the end of the day if that's enough to pay you back over a certain period of time, pay you back over a certain period of time. The other thing we can do is look at options of getting aggressive on, what types of improvements you want to do. Do you want to do a grant project? Do you want to have the benefit of more than just 10 years? Because you can do that. In Northwood, it was such a priority to update that brownfield former mall that the city took on board and had to create 800,000 square feet of straight-on asbestos in the building. The community went large, and the school supported 100-year, 30-year TIF.
A what?
100%, no, sorry, yeah, 100% 30-year TIF.
Okay.
And...
And the period, if it's longer than, what is it, 7 years?
10.
10. We have to negotiate with the school.
You do, yeah. And so the largest thing that the schools are worried about is the burden that comes from the schools from residential standpoint. Some school folks believe that each home comes with 4.8 kids. And that's just not the case anymore. And so when we work that through with the schools, they said, yeah, we need housing, we need this stuff, so we'll bring 100% 30-year TIF. At any point in time when the city's done paying off the debt for the main street and all the stuff and doing that, that TIF goes away, and they'll benefit from the full valuation of the improvements there. So we can go two routes. We can see if, after you figure out what you want to do, if you'll have enough money for the existing valuation. Or you might say, let's pursue the feasibility of doing a broader project, leveraging other programs that are going on, figuring out that cost, and then maybe talk to the schools. They might be open for something. And if they are, it's just a simple 20-day, 25-day notification period. They can waive that in a period of time through a letter saying that they support it, and then you can just go through the same motion, the same kind of timelines that we have here. So doing that might not have been done by the end of the year.
So just a clarification, the thought process that we had been going up on this path is that you create the TIF, whatever, you lock in your basis, the incremental gains create the cash flow, and then you decide what you're going to do with it. You're kind of indicating that reverses. We need to have what we want to do. So if we want to do X, Y, or Z, and it's, you said $2 million, let's say it's $2 million, it doesn't matter what the number is. That's, you decide what you want to do, and then you decide to create the TIF.
Yeah, and that's the general framework is where you need to.
Is that required by statute? Is that the order?
It's not required by statute, but that's of all the communities that I've worked in. They say, hey, we want to do these public improvements to support these private projects. Or they just want to build good public road space. They figure out what those costs are, and then they backtrack the map into the time frame they need. Because once that's set in stone, I just take the CRD spreadsheet that figures out the taxes and where they go, plug in the value of the debt, you know, and times the millage, and that will give me that schedule. Most communities figure out what they want to do. They figure out how much the cost in the target area, and then they figure out the time frame.
Does the number go the other way? If they set up a TIF and then decide what they want to do?
I'm sure communities have done them. I just never done that before.
And what's your experience? You mentioned Northwood, which sounds to me like it was a little bit of an exception based on the circumstances. What's your experience in those communities that work with schools on the traditional split? Is there any general rule of thumb for that?
Back before the formulas were different, some schools would say we want to make sure that we at least get we're made at least half whole, because there's provisions that if you go into an impasse, there's provisions under the Higher Life Code that says any income taxes that are gathered structure of project have to be made in schools. The city has to make those payments to the schools so they have to do this kind of thing. There's really no formula. Perrysburg on the private sector led Loves Commons project, they had their original assumption was that they were going to do 75% for 15 years. And Larry was going to make the schools whole and on a percentage basis. When the project started, they started realizing that the project valuation wasn't going to grab as fast as they thought. They whoever was not, that were coming back as fast as they wanted to get paid off. And so they went back to the city and extended timeframe from 75% to 30 years. And because they were already on the sidebar agreement with the schools signed off on that. So that's how they worked there, but the North Ward was still understanding that they needed residents, that they needed this, and so they all kind of coalesced around that project.
And you mentioned that once the bonds are paid off, then the TIF is dissolved?
Yes, you can do that if you wish.
But that's not a requirement?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some communities that have paid off the project, but other assets around that project still be beautified, still be paid off. And you can also use it for general economic purposes. So there's really the need that it's all in the market. But it would sketch you out at a certain time frame when you pick off.
Right.
Sylvania has community reinvestment areas already in the downtown, which are tax abatements. And depending on whether there's residential involved in it or not, the length of those tax abatements is determined. Have you had to work through those in previous TIFs?
We have, yeah, that's a good question. Because the TIF is redirecting it back to whoever owns the debt. The CRA is directing it back to the property owner. So most property owners always want to go after the CRAs first, because that benefits them. In this case, you do have a project that is in the TIF, but they're only benefiting from the CRA. There is a way that you can frame your CRAs where the property owner gets the benefit from the CRA for the first 15 years or whatever. And then if you did a 30-year TIF, that other last 15 years would be the TIF and you grab all of that information. That's the benefit of doing, having a longer time period. Because you do have that burden on. But the dialogue wasn't, I guess the timing of this project wasn't aligning with the project here that seeking to do some programs.
No, but we are aware of other new construction that's going to be happening in our downtown.
Okay.
And we may need to talk to them as well then. We'll need some guidance on how to go about that.
Sure. Do you have, less square footage than the type of project? And then the construction value, I can engineer a number. The fatal flaw in this program is that someone will say the project's going to cost $16 million. That's what our construction estimate is. And everyone gets in and put that number in the tax spreadsheet. And that's completely wrong because you can be paying $190 a square foot new though. But when, you know, Anita gets told that she's going to average them out, or any auditor, they average them out. So what I do is I look at similar land use codes. In this case, I look here, 429. So, and I did that before I came here. So inside five, that building is valued, and it's the building value, not the land value. Building value is at 529 divided into square footage. That's assessed valuation, it's 30 bucks a square foot. Some of the valuations people do on new builds and things like that, they'll take the construction estimate and then factor in the TIF valuation that way, and you're never going to pay yourself back. You know, in this case, it's going to be your money. You know, if you want to owe the bondholder, you'd be taking money out of general revenues to cover the difference between what the projections are and what actualized. So, but if you know the square footage and the general land use of what you want to do, I'd be able to come up with a general estimate based upon similar projects and then work on that valuation for a more conservative valuation moving forward. And so if you know the timing of those projects and that information, you can kind of roll that in.
Very good. Thank you for that information.
I just want to jump back in and wanted you to hear that and ask the questions, and we didn't want to rush into something and put something in place and be 6 months into 22 saying, why do we do that? You know, so what I'd like to propose is that we're going to get together and come back with something with a little more thought out, a little more a game plan of how we should proceed. And I think, you know, the biggest thing I learned when I talked to Glenn was the this assumption that all these property values are going to go up in downtown 19%, and that is not what's going to happen. So that's what I'd like to do, I guess, if there's any other questions.
I just have a quick question. Do you have a website? That's like a lot of information. It'd be really great to like look at your website and.
Sure, yeah, it's revelry.me.
Revelry?
Yeah, Revelry. But if you want to type in comprehensiveplans.com, that's a URL for the website.
Comprehensiveplans.com?
Yep.
Bill, why don't you send that around to us?
I will. I'll get it.
The other question that jumps to my head right away is, shouldn't we be talking to the schools about this?
Oh, I forgot to mention, Leslie and I meet with the schools. We had one meeting, they had some very good questions, but they asked some other things from us, so we're still talking to them, so at least we had the initial meeting.
Okay, so they know we're thinking about this.
Yes, they definitely know we're thinking about it, and they want to know more what we're thinking, how many years, and those kind of things, and said we'd be big back.
Well, you know, thinking back on our downtown plan, that is all geared towards private development of our downtown, and nothing specifically that we're going to do, which suggests to me that we probably need a longer time horizon than 10 years to reap the benefit of what we think can happen in downtown Sylvania, which means that, you know, the schools are going to be our partner in this going forward. Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
I'll send that information.
Thank you very much.
Glenn, thank you for coming tonight. We appreciate it very much. All right, we are now up to agenda item 9, which has to do with the River Trail pedestrian crossing on Haroon Road to put in a pedestrian hybrid beacon. Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The pedestrian hybrid beacon is the say the new name of what's typically referred to as a hawk signal. It is the exact same signal that I talked to you probably about a year ago in putting it over the river trail. And what this project will do is will enable, if there is a walker or biker on the trail that comes up to Haroon Road, they'll basically be able to push a button. The overhead lights will go through a sequence of flashing and then ultimately to stop the red. That will indicate to the oncoming traffic to stop, allow that pedestrian to cross, and then that signal will turn off again, opening up the traffic to move forward on the road. So are looking at advertising and awarding the project at this year. Construction-wise, will be scheduled for 2022. The delivery time on traffic poles is unbelievable. It's at least 6 months. Some projects have waited more than that. So we'd like to give this moving because that's the project itself actually won't take very long, but it's just getting the poles. So we'd like to start moving on that. We hope that the project can be open by tomorrow, back in holiday, but we didn't necessarily jump and we get it done. The estimated cost of the project is $110,697.79. It'll be paid from our capital improvement fund and move forward as part of our plan. And we also oversee, this is a joint project. We joined this project with the Haroon project as part of our BWC application. portion that grant program onto this project will get about $26,500 of the EDC funds returned to us as part of this project. So net out of pocket will be about $4,000, $3,000. We do think it's a needed project, this has been talked about for some time since we opened the trail. At the time that we opened the trail, this was looked at, but it was not, it wasn't warranted for the traffic counts. We did a study there, the traffic counts increased, but then we were also able to go from proposed pedestrian traffic to actual pedestrian traffic. And that combination of increased vehicular and actual pedestrian traffic does work the same. So it's time for it to go in, and we must request that the clerk be authorized to advertise.
My original vision for this was that the river trail would go under the Roon Road Bridge, as we do go under US 23. But the engineers determined that the bridge opening was not wide enough or the height enough above the floodplain to be able to do that. So we investigated these Hawk lights, and I've watched them in action in the city of Worthington. There's two in their downtown area, and they are very effective. They are, some of you might think they're going to be objectionable. They put three stoplights up above the road. They start flashing red, and then they go all solid red. But having watched how well the strobe lights work or don't work along McCord Road and out on Erie Street, I think the Hawk light is the right approach. The traffic coming down off the hill from the hospital, heading north on Haroon, barrels right along. I think this is the right thing to do.
Can you time this with the light at Monroe and Haroon?
There's not much timing to be done with this. The whole thing that we're looking into is if the pedestrian does activate this Hawk signal,
yeah,
if that can adjust the timing sequence on the path over the road. So we're taking a look at that. But this signal, for everything to be, well, coordinated, and that's what it's called.
Right.
Coordinated signals. And this Hawk signal operates on its own. It doesn't have that coordinated ability. What we're taking a look is if we can run a line up to the road and at least let that signal know that it's activated, and then see if we can adjust the timing signal there.
Okay.
Now, and understand that this is only, you know, it will be, you know, 20 seconds, 25 seconds that the district has. Nobody's going to have to run, but you shouldn't allow it.
Mr. Ayler, I have a quick question. You confused me a little bit when you talked about the delivery time for the traffic polls is 6 months. I was thinking that was like a study of traffic or something. Like, what are the traffic polls? Is that the study of the traffic, the individuals in the...
No, the polls are the lights.
Oh.
The signal poll, traffic signal polls.
So for the delivery on those, yeah. Is that what you're saying? Oh, yes. That confused me. Okay. So the traffic polls, literally the polls. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Allen? Just for looking in the long term, how much life is left in that bridge? How much longer do we anticipate that bridge will be able to continue without maintenance restoration?
That, I believe the condition of that bridge is a 2, and to before you really start looking at upgrading the bridge, that's similar to the Silicon Drive Bridge, that needs to be a 5. It takes a long time. Several years.
So probably like 20 years.
Yeah, at least
that would be my guess. Mr. Allen, I'm sure you're going to take care of this when you're planning, but the only thing I would suggest is whatever the duration is, needs to take into account people who don't have the same level of mobility as many people who might use the trail or be on a bicycle or something like that. There are obviously citizens out there that don't have the ability to move quite as fast, and that's a pretty wide road.
Now, their time for, to allow, they have to be allowed for ADA crossing and things of that nature, so if they take a look at the north of the road and see what's happening.
I assume there was a science to it, but I just wanted to mention.
Quick question, will there be an approach sign to the traffic that's barreling downhill from Flower? Will there be a sign that says you have the lights approaching or some kind of warning?
There will be like a sign, a clock signal ahead of us for overhead, kind of like we see them all in. They have a signal.
Okay, and then one more thing, can we regain the crosswalk?
Yeah.
It's kind of wearing on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that would, yeah. That was something, we actually were going to do that this past summer because of a project we did because of Tate's previous message, so.
Council is ready to proceed. Mrs. Westfall, we need a motion to authorize the clerk to advertise for bids for this traffic signal.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move that we authorize the clerk of council to advertise for bids for the Sylvania River Trail Pedestrian Hybrid Beacon Project.
Second.
And moved and seconded to authorize the clerk to advertise for bids for this project. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Aller, when do you expect those bids to be due?
We plan on being back at 22nd in October for our approvals, so between the first and second in October, we'll take this.
Thank you. All right, move on to agenda item 10. You have a banner application that's come in from the Sylvania Area Chamber of Commerce to put a banner up they've put in the past for the Fall Festival. It's on the back of their application. Every banner application is required by ordinance to come to City Council. We do have an ordinance for this, ordinance 62021. Mr. Hanem, any questions, or are you prepared to proceed with this?
Let's roll. Mr. Mayor, I've moved adoption of ordinance number 60-21, and I'll read by title only, approving the banner application of the Sylvania Area Chamber of Commerce, authorizing the zoning administrator to indicate such approval on behalf of the City of Sylvania, and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for passage of ordinance 60-21 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and ordinance 60-21 is enacted as an emergency measure.
You know, the Southview graduate, the graphic looks very Northview color.
All right, we're now up to agenda item 11. We have proposed ordinance 61-21. This is to enter an agreement to modify our electronic monitoring services through of the Sylvania Municipal Court. This is Brining.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The magistrate and judge of the Sylvania Municipal Court forwarded this proposed agreement to us for consideration. They currently have electronic monitoring that defendants in the court are placed under. However, it wasn't formally in an agreement like this, so that's the change. So there's not a change in procedure, just a change in the formality of it, and they've asked that council approve it.
Mrs. Brining, so the cost projections here, they're already embedded in the budget?
Yes, that's in the court budget.
It's not an incremental cost.
Correct. I believe now they are charged based on how many they put on, and I'm not sure exactly what that cost is, but this sets them at a specific number for the electronic monitoring and a specific number for the alcohol monitoring. And then they can go over that, of course, but then they're just charged at a higher rate for those, I believe.
And
the cost is in the budget, in the court budget already.
Right, and by doing this, that avoids potentially sending the individual to the jail out west of here?
Correct. If we didn't have the ability to put them on electronic monitoring through the county, we don't have that capability at the court now, I don't believe. So if we didn't enter into the agreement with them, they could conceivably say that they weren't going to do it, that they wouldn't monitor the defendants for us.
I assume Judge Von Faglio originated this?
That's correct.
Toby, are you comfortable with the dollar amounts? That seems like an awfully large sum of money, $213,525. Do we pay that at $13 a day? Okay. We do have ordinance 61-2021 to enter into this new agreement. Mr. Frye.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 61-2021, read by title only. Authorizing the mayor and director of finance to enter into an agreement with the Board of Commissioners of Lucas County, Ohio for electronic monitoring services for the Sylvania Municipal Court, and I'd like to move adoption of ordinance 61-2021 as an emergency measure.
Second.
And moved and seconded for passage of ordinance 61-2021 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 61-2021 is enacted as an emergency measure. Moving on to the second page of our agenda for this evening, we're now up to agenda item 12. Chief Snore is here to ask for permission to purchase a new vehicle for the police department. Chief Snore.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Earlier this year, we had purchased two planned vehicles, part of our fleet, the capital budget this 2021. Since that time, one of our air vehicles had a maintenance issue, problem with the roof, and that vehicle had been taken out of service and was ultimately sold at auction. Also during this year, we received a donation from a local charitable organization that intended to assist in buying a vehicle. And as part of that opportunity, a Dodge Ram truck we bought earlier in the year will be used for a variety of purposes was repurposed community affairs and will become a bigger truck. So initially that truck was going to be a multi-purpose vehicle to be driven by an administrator and also used for towing some of our trailers and that sort of duties. So after all those moving items moving around and that sort of thing, we're still short one vehicle. And the culmination of all this has been a reduction over the last 2 years of three vehicles from our fleet. We try to multi-purpose vehicles as much as possible. We right now have three administrators and only two vehicles assigned to the administration. We also use those vehicles to send out to town for training. So right now, with the donation and the residual funds from the two vehicles we purchased earlier, we're about $40,472. Carabon Motors has been looking for a state contract vehicle or vehicle state contract pricing course for a few months. They have located a 2021 Dodge Durango. The regular price on that vehicle is about, our MSRP is $43,417. But through state contract pricing, we can obtain that vehicle for $32,712, which will leave us still about $7,700 left in that capital expense item. So, seek permission to make that purchase.
Chief, first of all, it's wonderful that you were able to actually find a vehicle.
Right.
Which is not exactly easy to do from what I've done.
It actually wasn't approved. Yeah, I located the number.
And what else needs to be done if this is actually authorized as far as outfitting the vehicle, and what is the anticipated cost of that?
It's fairly minimal. We do, all of our vehicles assigned to the fleet, by and large, we do at least put emergency lights and sirens on in case they have to use for emergency response, or more often than not, our events, sometimes the events in town will utilize all the vehicles on the fleet. And that is done in-house here, so we just have the equipment, the installation is done by our city mechanic, so a couple thousand dollars worth of lights at the most. And it may come out of this capital expense, we also have budgeted funds for vehicle maintenance that exceed those expenses as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You do have in your council packets proposed ordinance 62-2021 to authorize this purchase. Mr. Fry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 62-2021 and read by title only. Authorizing the mayor and director of finance to accept the proposal of Yark Automotive for the purchase of one new 2021 Dodge Durango for the Sylvania City Police Department, appropriating funds therefore in the amount of $32,712. I move passage of ordinance number 62-2021 as an emergency measure.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for passage of ordinance 62-2021 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 62-2021 is enacted as an emergency measure. Thank you. Thank you for the update, Chief. Moving on to agenda item 13, you have a report from the service director about two obsolete vehicles, a 2005 and a 2006 Bolt Ford F-250 pickups. Mr. Aller.
These two pickups were part of the plan, so to speak, with the vehicle purchases that were made last year. Also, the new vehicles came in, we can now dispose of the vehicles that they replaced. So, we are recommending that we dispose of the 2004 F-250 and the 2006 Ford F-250, 15 to 16 years old, and we have obtained all money that we can. We do recommend that we do a direct deal versus just scrap value on this. So.
We need a motion to authorize these to be disposed of on GovDeals. First vehicle listed is a Streets Department vehicle. So, Mrs. Westfall, will you make the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move that we put the following items as discussed here or as presented here on GovDeals.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to grant approval to dispose of these two F-250 pickup trucks on GovDeals. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to agenda item 14, committee reports. We do have added item 14A, which is a report of the Zoning and Annexation Committee meeting held earlier this evening at 6:15 in Council Chambers. Mr. Hanum.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, we did hold an Annexation Zoning Committee meeting this evening at 6:15 for the purpose of discussing SUP-1 2021, an application from the Sylvania Board of Education for a special use permit for a cell tower. All members of council were present, along with all members of the council, including all the committee members, Mayor Stow and our law director, Bill Sanford and Kevin Aller. And we had a number of visitors there. Meeting began with a review of the special use criteria for considering the cell tower special use. As committee chair, I commented on each of those criteria as we went through those. I'm going to leave the specifics of that to the tape rather than try and summarize those here. We then took comments or comments and observations by each member of the committee and the other members of council. Legal counsel for the applicant commented on our action, and Dr. Samuelson, who has submitted some other materials by email, also addressed the committee. The decision of the committee was to prepare legislation consistent with the Planning Commission recommendation, and that we would consider that legislation for the next council meeting, and we adjourned at 7:02. And that's all I have.
All right, would you like to, we talked about authorizing legislation be prepared to follow the Plan Commission's recommendation, so you have something to talk about?
I can, I'll move adoption of legislation consistent with the Planning Commission recommendation for our next council meeting.
Adoption or preparation?
I'm sorry?
I think you said adoption of.
No, preparation of legislation consistent with the Planning Commission recommendation.
Great, thank you.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to prepare legislation for SUP1, following the recommendation of the Planning Commission for the consideration of council. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Added agenda item 14B, Mr. Richardson would like to talk about some open board appointments. Mr. Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, at the end of this calendar year, we're going to have a couple openings or terms that are ending for the Board of Appeals, and I wanted to make sure that we were advertising for the Board of Appeals and community members wishing to serve. I'll, of course, also reach out to the current members to see if they're interested in continuing, but I would like to go through a process of you know, collecting interested community members and going through the interviews. Do you need a formal motion on that, or?
What action are you looking to do? Do you want the city to post it on our?
Yes, post the, I would like the city to post open board appeals.
I don't think a motion is required for that. You publicly noticed it here at a city council meeting, and we will follow through on the city website. I don't think you're prepared to schedule a committee meeting to review those, so I don't think any action is needed. You've taken it already by announcing those openings.
Perfect.
Thank you.
That is all.
Are there any additional committee reports to be made at this time? Or any committee referrals? Hearing none, we have no informational items for you at the bottom of the agenda. So if council is ready, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and this council stands adjourned until its next regularly scheduled meeting in 13 days. On Monday, September 20th at 7:30 p.m. Thank you all for attending.